Greetings from the Candy Colored Studio, where life is sweeter in candy color. I'm oil painter Katrina Berg, and I'm so glad you're here. I'll be chatting with you from my Midway, Utah home, serving up a palette of support, hope, and love with a side of realness. As a mother of five, including five-year-old twins, I know too well that life is rarely easy and jolly, but savoring the sweet moments gives us the strength we need to find peace, growth, and fulfillment along our journey. Again, so happy you're here and welcome. Are you an artist looking to improve your art biz? The first week of March, and only the first week of March, I'll be offering 3 mini courses and the Candy Colored Club will also be available. Listen to the end of this episode for all the details, and if you need more info or a reminder, make sure you're on my sweet list, aka my email list. Today, I have the total pleasure to introduce to you my beautiful friend, Melinda Brown, who many of you that are friends with her know that she goes by Mindy amongst her friends. We originally met at art shows, and she and her family are avid art collectors. The more that I got to know Mindy, the more I learned of the foundations and causes she supports that seek to protect and uplift women. One sweet afternoon, she shared with me some of the precious gems that she was researching for this book. It came at a time when I was struggling spiritually with so many unanswered questions. Our talk and the knowledge she shared with me that day has been an important part of my healing and understanding that I will always treasure. I have been anxiously waiting for her book to be published, and I'm excited for each of you to have the opportunity as well. And just so you know how much Mindy loves and supports women and girls, I'm going to read to you the end. At the very end of her book, in the About author page, it reads, Melinda Wheelwright Brown earned a bachelor's degree in economics from Brigham Young University and is a respected teacher and public speaker. She has a passion for solving problems, particularly those faced by women. This has led to her involvement in and support of several nonprofit organizations, including Fight the New Drug, Days for Girls, Better Days 2020, Big Ocean Women, and the Elizabeth Smart Foundation, where she currently chairs the board. Melinda and her husband Doug are the parents of 4 children and have recently entered the delightful world of grandparenthood. Okay, I'm really going to try not to cry throughout this episode, but I'm telling you, Mindy is just such a special soul, and she has so much to give. So Mindy, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, it's such a pleasure to be here. Thank you. Those are kind words. That's daunting. Let's hope I can share some meaningful things now. You've set high expectations.
No, these are not high expectations. This is your destiny, Mindy. Okay, so let's just dive right in. Just so that people know a little bit more about you and your family, just give us any background that you want to share.
Okay, so like you said, I'm married to Doug Brown, and he's a physician, which has given us opportunities to live around the country. He and I both grew up in California. I also had a lot of my growing up years in Boston, so I kind of had both coasts factoring into that. And then we did our schooling mostly in Utah, but then went to North Carolina for 5 years for some of his training, and then also settled for the rest of our lives in Seattle, which actually was 3 years before we picked up and moved to Utah. So now we're in Utah, and we love it. We love it here, and we've raised our 4 kids. Mostly all of them have been teenagers here, and that has been a great experience, and now they're spread out all over. Our youngest is a senior in high school, and we're just getting ready to fill our nest with other things when she leaves in a few months.
Oh, what an exciting time. And what an exciting time for your family too. You know, obviously your daughter's going to move on, and that's an end of an era. And for her to be able to be a part of this, this lift and this takeoff of this book is so amazing. Something that I wanted to share with you is that Mindy and Doug also, their second youngest daughter, Candace, she has actually written some articles for Better Days 2020. You'll have to go look up one in particular that I've read that's absolutely wonderful. But she and her mom are obviously, it's very important to them, these causes that their family have taken up. And I've just always been so impressed with your with Candace and your family in general, but I remember the first time I met her, I could tell how much she loved supporting you in these causes and that she had also grown to love them too. And then I got to read her article and that was so special. So again, beautiful family, beautiful kids. It's really awesome. We even got to talk about her daughter-in-law, Allie, this morning, and that was really special. Allie, I'm excited to meet you. And baby, remind me.
Callahan,
their brand new grandbaby and first one, which is so exciting. So many exciting things. Okay, so let's jump into the book a little bit. What are some things that you feel like you had to give up to make this book happen?
That is such a great question. And there were definitely things that I was willing to give up and a lot of things that I wasn't. So I kind of think of this in three parts. The first, the biggest, most just obvious thing was sleep. This book just wasn't going to write itself. That was kind of the phrase I used a lot with my husband when he was complaining about staying up too late or getting up too early. But I really think that there are a whole lot more books than we know of or we can imagine that were written in jammies very early in the morning when it's still pitch black outside, because that's just when it's quiet and when nothing else will interrupt. So sleep was the biggest thing, probably, really. I would say camaraderie and sociality also had to flex a little bit, and that was hard. I had been a full-time mom for so many years and really enjoyed being the captain of my own schedule. And I was able to just give all my time to volunteering and philanthropy and lunch with the girlfriends and great conversation and discussion and deep thinking with so many wonderful people that I love. And really, I had to not give it up, but I had to be really careful that, you know, I give it the right amount of time. Like, I just would set limits. I'd set an alarm on my phone that, okay, I can meet these friends for 1 hour, but I shouldn't let it drift into 2 hours because I need to get back to my office and back to my computer. Writing is lonely. So there were times, especially in the writing year, that it just felt like, wow, I'm kind of become a hermit. But I think you just have to look at the long game there and know that I won't be a hermit forever. I'll get this done and I'll get back out and people will remember who I am, hopefully. And I was careful to make sure that my kids never felt the cost of that. You know, I always would pick up the phone for them, but there were others, people that I'm sorry to say, I would let go to voicemail. And then in the evenings when I really needed a break, I would catch up on all of those things. And one of the really surprising things I felt like I had to give up, and not permanently give up, but I needed to look at it a little differently, was service. And that kind of sounds strange, but as somebody home and in charge of my own schedule, you know, it was easy for me if I saw an email or something from, you know, a church leader saying, could anybody take dinner to so-and-so? Oh yeah, sure. No problem. I'll do it. Whatever. I had to kind of get comfortable with seeing the email and thinking, you know what, let's give that 24 hours. If nobody else responds, then I'll step in. And it was painful. And it was a little bit, I think there was a temporary kind of existential crisis in that, where I had to start to realize if this topic and this research and writing this book is my passion, then my passion and fulfilling it and living up to my purpose in that passion is a gift that I'm meant to share. And in this case, it's not something I can share a little bit every day, like I maybe have been used to giving service. This is one that it's going to take a couple of years and then boom, it's going to be this big service that here you go, here's this book. And so that was an adjustment. And actually, it really kept me going in some of the hard days of the publishing year to just hang in there, because I felt like, wow, if I don't see this thing through to completion, then I have wasted all those service things I really should have been doing. Like, the only way I can justify that time in my office alone writing and researching is that I got to get this finished and give this to everybody else, because that's the service that will make up for what I gave up.
Okay, there are so many gems in there. I love that you narrowed it down to three that we can all totally relate to, whether we're an artist, a mother, an entrepreneur. I think a lot of us give up sleep on a regular basis. And I think sometimes we guilt ourselves about that choice. But I think sometimes there is something meant to be done. And that if we do sacrifice some sleep, there is a reward, you know, and I think that you could see that down the road that this gift needed to happen. And to make it happen, you needed to be doing that in the wee quiet hours of darkness. So I love that. And then your second one about having to give up as much social as what you know, that you were used to. I think a lot of us, again, realize that we can't make every lunch date and we can't make every social event as much as we would like to. I know that right now I feel like a lot of times there's so many art events that I would like to go to and I just can't because I'm so busy with my kids and they need to come first. And so I think that, you know, even though you were kind of towards the tail end of raising your kids, you still had to make that choice. So if you ever feel like you're making that choice, don't feel guilty because it's okay. It's sometimes we have to make those hard choices. And then the third one, I'm so impressed that first of all, that you were able to look at service in a different way. And you were able to recognize that you didn't necessarily have to give it up, but you needed to change the way that you were looking at it. You needed to give yourself a little bit of time before you jumped in there. And I love that because I found myself doing that recently. Instead of guilting myself into just jumping in and doing everything, I did the same thing. I've been trying to wait. And it's so funny because I've never heard anyone describe it like that, but it just spoke to my soul because that's exactly what I've been doing. And I feel like that sometimes it's really easy for some of us to make a quick decision. And there's others that really just needed another hour to coordinate with their spouse or the children to see if they could make that service opportunity happen. And if it's always the same people jumping to that opportunity, it doesn't allow those other people that opportunity to serve. So it is kind of a gift that you are allowing others to serve and that you recognize that your service was a long game service. It was not going to be something that would come tonight at 6 o'clock. It was something that would come in March and April of 2020. And that's a hard thing to accept. And yet it's obviously we're going to reap so many rewards. So many of us will just reap that service that you were willing to give us in the long game. So thank you for that. Thank you for that. Okay, so let's go on to the second main thing that I've been trying to talk about in this second season of the podcast, really education. And so we're going to talk for just a minute about Mindy and her educational journey. And so we all know by now that Mindy actually studied economics, which is so amazing. But Mindy, tell us about what, you know, did you take writing classes or did you ever imagine that you'd want to be an art author one day?
Truthfully, economics was like a means to the end, to an end to me. And when I started in mathematics as a major, moved to history a little bit, and it was about halfway through my undergraduate studies that I discovered economics and thought, oh, this is the way that I think. This is the way my brain works. This will be easy, and I can just now cruise on through and get done quickly. I was getting serious dating my husband. We knew we didn't want to wait long to start our family, and so I was trying to wrap things up. I didn't want to be there forever in college. But the beauty of, I think, finding that thing that speaks to you and that's that you're passionate about is that it just opens new ways of learning to you. And really what you want to do at that stage of life more than anything, I think, is learn to absolutely love learning. It needs to become something you're passionate about so that you become more independent in it. You know, you've spent all those years growing up where you were kind of being spoon-fed education. And when you're leaving college, it's really a time, it's kind of a make or break pivot point where are you going to keep learning on your own? Or are you just going to think, oh, that's something I did in college and I guess I'm done with that, you know? And that wasn't an option for me. I loved learning and I've always loved reading. I'm a nonfiction reader, probably more than fiction. And I remind myself to listen mostly on Audible. My eye reading hours, I try to do for nonfiction where I want to take notes and really, you know, get a lot of things jotted down that I'm learning because I don't have a great memory. But my fiction hours, I usually listen to, and I think that makes me a more fun person. I need to be more fun. So I try to work in fiction. But, you know, for me, just continuing education on my own through things I was interested in was really what was fascinating to me all those in-between years when I was, you know, raising my children. I always felt like I need to be reading something interesting enough that when I put it down to vacuum, I have something interesting to think about while vacuuming. So that's kind of how I got through those years, I would say.
Oh, I can understand that so well. That was me when I was changing diapers and doing dishes and laundry when the kids were too little to help and do it themselves. I would plan out my paintings. I would know exactly what I was going to do once I got into the studio. But I love how you needed something interesting just to feast on in your mind. That's so beautiful. Okay, so obviously this wasn't something, you know, maybe necessarily on your radar, but even still, so again, this is a great perspective coming from somebody who didn't necessarily major in writing, but this is the direction you've gone, obviously, because you love to learn and you love to share ideas and you want to share that with people. So with, I know there's so many students out there in high school, or maybe they're just starting college, and they really think that there are some ideas that they feel like they would like to share at one point. So what kind of advice would you give to them? Should they go into debt to attend an expensive university, or should they try local schools to avoid debt? And just anything you feel on this topic.
Well, for our family, this is funny because my older kids have gone to a little bit pricier schools, and there have been days that I've really rolled my eyes at that and thought, why aren't you nearby and you could be learning, you know, similarly. But for them, that was the right choice for them. I think so much of it just has to do with what's the right fit for you. And I'm just a firm believer in, I think it was Abraham Lincoln who said, whatever you do, be a good one, you know, be the best at what you choose to do. So, you know, I think education, the more, the better. And whatever is satisfying to you, that's great. You know, there's so many great ways to learn, and especially in this digital age. I mean, what's available now for literally free of charge. I mean, you could have an amazing college level education without worrying about spending that. And the biggest thing is just to open your mind, expand your worldview, and start to see things from different perspectives. And really, to me, reading is how you do that. You can step into so many different lives through different books. And so, you know, that's really important. And education is awesome. Don't stop. And that, I plan to go get more of formal education. That's kind of one of the next chapters coming up. And so I'm definitely into lots of education. So.
Oh, that's amazing. And I love how you just so beautifully put that there are so many ways to receive that education and to just take all those ways and find which one is right for you and just go for it. So that was wonderful advice. Thank you for that. So again, what would you recommend for people like studying? Obviously, you mentioned to me that you loved humanities. You realized you loved humanities. And what was the other one? Oh, that's right. Women's studies, which was pretty much non-existent. Yeah, exactly. So what would you recommend that these future writers study? Or should they just try any field that's interesting to them? I think that you've kind of already answered this to a certain extent, but go ahead and elaborate on that.
Well, I think interdisciplinary studies is really fascinating to see connections between things. I think that's what jumped out to me in humanities was I felt like, oh, it all ties together. And, you know, all truth is great truth and it supports all the different pieces of it. And so I don't think you can go wrong. I think whatever you are fascinated with, and that will change over time. So I don't think you need to feel like your undergraduate degree when you're, you know, 18 to 25 or whatever that time frame might be, is the be all and end all. It's not even remotely. There are so many seasons of our lives, and in different periods of time, I've been fascinated with different focus points, and that's great. And always you can be learning about those things. It doesn't have to be formal. So there are just lots of different opportunities and windows that you just can move between phases really seamlessly. And you'll change over time too. I mean, there are some things that I love to read about now that I never would have been interested in years ago. And that, you know, everything's available. So it's great. It's a wonderful time to be alive.
Oh, isn't it? And I think you're absolutely right. I love that you explain how it's okay to have different passions at different times of our life. And most of us do feel that way. You know, there was a time when I think that our parents and their parents, they chose one thing they wanted to do, and that's all they did. And for whatever reason, they were happy doing that. But for so many of us, we have these we're multi-passionate people, and we need to just follow our hearts, follow our dreams, follow where the learning takes us. And I just love the way that you explained all that. So in preparation for writing your book, did you participate in writing groups, or have you done any local writing workshops, or just any other things that helped you along the way?
Well, this was actually probably a pretty atypical path, not available to everyone, but kind of in the last 12-year window or so, my parents had the opportunity to preside over BYU Hawaii, and they were there for 8 years, and during that window of time, they were so busy. I just swamped with so many great things, so many opportunities. And one of those responsibilities was lots and lots and lots of speaking events. And it just, honestly, they just didn't have, there weren't enough hours in their days to do everything that needed doing. And because I was available a little more than some of my siblings at that stage of life, and I was very interested in the sort of things they were wanting to talk about and give speeches and, you know, different presentations about, I kind of became their pseudo assistant. And so those were some of just the most absolutely precious years of my life, because I was able to grow so close to both of them in a way that, as a kid, we didn't have a lot of deep spiritual discussions exactly. I mean, we had family home evening, we went to church, but it wasn't like we were really getting into nitty gritty theology and deep thoughts. And now, and also, I mean, they were on a professional course. My dad was a professor my growing up years, and so he was busy thinking about business things and forecasting and manufacturing and these other things. And so it was kind of new for them to have this full-time sort of theology, big purpose of life sort of calling. And so we worked really closely on that. And probably the most important thing I learned for this book is just really how to tap into the Spirit and be led by the Spirit in researching and looking at things differently. And then also finding the words to describe it. You know, he was, my dad especially would give devotionals regularly to all of these young adults, and it needed to be simple. It needed to be something that they could walk out of that auditorium there with maybe three main points that they would remember. It needed to be catchy enough that they'd stay awake and not turn to their homework in their lap or something. And so it was just a really great process for me to learn so, so much and just kind of have those experiences talking through so much with them. And actually, when they finished that responsibility, they moved on to be temple presidents in Boston. And so that was an amazing 3-year window that was just perfectly timed for what I needed. Obviously, I've spent a lot of time in the temple thinking about these things, and they were hugely helpful with that. And so it just all worked out. It, you know, it's amazing. But no, I haven't taken any writing courses, you know, so I'm so sorry, all of you authors that are spending all that time doing that. I know that's a really great thing to do too. And maybe I'll do that next. I'm doing things out of order in my life, I guess.
No, I don't think there's ever anything out of order. And I think that there's so many things that we can learn from all those things you just shared. For one, I feel like the beginning of any type of book or creation is the theology and the thought. And you spend all this time with your parents getting to be able to learn, to think deeply, and to dissect these ideas and to take them a little bit deeper, to go down those rabbit holes that we've talked about before. And so that almost seems like that's such a foundation. And then you need to learn how to communicate all those ideas. And that's what you were doing, helping your parents with these speaking engagements and all these other things. And you could have been doing the same thing and communicating, but being an editor of a newspaper, you're still doing the same skills, right? And so I think that if you can start with thought and then figure out a way to communicate it, whether it's verbally, whether, and obviously you probably wrote all the things down before you had to speak and learn to be a good speaker. And so it's all connected. And I love that all those things was a beautiful pathway to writing this book. And so I think that, again, I think a lot of times we think we have to go one direction to become an author, but we don't. So if you feel like you need to start a podcast, do it. And then at some point, write a book with all those thoughts, you know? And I think, again, I think it's really easy for us. I'm going to talk about this this is one of the topics I've been talking about with a lot of artists recently, is that it's really easy as creatives to apologize for things that we're doing, either that we've done, taken something a different direction, or like you were saying, you did something out of order, but you didn't. You did it absolutely perfect for your path. And I just think that that's so wonderful. So good job with that. Okay. So a couple things, as we start to dive into the book, I want you to know that I was overcome by the thought, the detail, the research, the prayerful searching that you undertook. I not only engulfed every word and thought, but I loved reading carefully through the footnotes. So just to our listener here today, I just want you to know that when you get this book, there is so much more at the end of every chapter. And it was funny because Carl said to me, "You're taking a little bit longer to read the chapters." We read the book together. He would read a chapter, I would read a chapter. And I said to him, "That's because I'm going through the footnotes. There's so much more goodness in the footnotes." So I have to tell you that when you read the book, be prepared that you will want to spend some time in those footnotes, because it's not just links to extra information or where the initial quote came from, but a lot of it is annotated by Mindy herself throughout those footnotes. And it's just, there's some wonderful things in the footnotes. So I'm just going to start out with that. And then I want you to know that I was very touched by the acknowledgement section, and I have to read to you this one part. So this is at the very end of the book, and she basically thanks her family. She thanks, I can't remember what was the second group. Oh, that's right, the beta readers. And then also, I think in that second part, you even thanked the thought that came before, where all these quotes come from. I think that was kind of the second part. And then the third part, I'm actually going to read it to you guys. She said, okay, this last part, when I got to it, I totally started to cry. And I've actually asked Mindy to read this part, if that's okay. And yeah, you're going to love it. It's amazing.
Okay. My thanks to those whose names I may not know, but whose faith I have certainly felt. The countless searching souls who have pled and wrestled with divinity for explanations to the challenges of mortality, especially those related to the relationship between men and women. I bear witness to the cumulative effect of the prayers of so many. Thanks to each of our separate but similar efforts, I have repeatedly been overcome with the sense that the veil or the earth is beginning to burst. I'm so thankful for the continuing restoration of the fullness of the gospel of Jesus Christ.
Okay, now if that doesn't give you a little insight into where this book is going, I'll be surprised. But I just want you to know that as we dive into this beautiful book, and obviously we can't possibly touch on every topic that touched Carl and I, but again, the name of the book is Even Adam, and just let that kind of wash over you for a minute, and we'll let Mindy dive in. So Mindy, tell us a little bit about why you felt so driven to write this book.
Well, first of all, it really started out as a project for myself. I didn't start out thinking, I'm going to write a book about this. You know, let's get some Eve books and start researching. It started, interestingly enough, and I feel like this makes perfect sense as I'm surrounded with all this beautiful artwork in Katrina's studio. It started with a painting that I had received as a Christmas gift just a month before this event started to occur. It's a painting by Caitlin Conley, a beautiful piece called Mother of All Living. And so this portrait of Eve hangs in my office across from my desk. And we, in January of 2016, we were having kind of some experiences as an extended family that required some tough choices. No easy options. Very complicated. And the issues surrounding it don't even matter, because everybody has been here. Like, you know, those moments where you just think, oh, life is so complicated. And what is the right answer? There is no right answer. They're all hard answers. They're just, I don't know what the right choice here is. And It was actually on one of those days where I'd spent a lot of time on the phone with different family members and had just felt like, oh, we'd all just been searching for the right way to handle some things for several weeks. And almost in desperation, I was just looking at this beautiful painting there and actually out loud, which I don't normally talk out loud to myself or alone in my office, but I just looked at this painting and I said, Eve, can you help me? And it just was a phenomenally powerful moment where it was as if she leaned out of that frame and said, yes, I thought you would never ask. And those are the words. I mean, that's for 4 years, those words have really sustained me through this project. It was almost a stunning. It took my breath away and I stopped thinking about the family crisis going on and just thought, wait, really? Like how? How can you? I just said that. I wasn't really thinking that you could help me like that. But then as I really paused, and I mean, I knew the basics, but I had never, even for all my women's studies interest, I never really had dug super deep into Eve's story. Just kind of the typical, probably, for somebody like me. And as I began to contemplate the details of it, it just came crystal clear. And I just thought, oh my word, how could I have sat here through all these conversations and not realize this? Yes, your story holds the keys to all of this. And we began to talk about it as a family. And I kind of took some of the others figuratively by the hand and said, let's think about this. Like, look at what Eve decided, what she felt like was worth sacrificing for love and family and progress and development, becoming more like God. That I think this can really apply to us. And it was actually a turning point in that time for all of us. It kind of shifted our perspective a bit. It focused our thoughts a little bit more closely on the long game, which we've already talked about a bit. And it was overwhelming. And so I dug into that it kind of, you know, I took this tangent on other things I was working on at the time. And I probably spent 4 or 5 months just really digging in. And then Mother's Day was approaching. And of course, Mother's Day is a really hard day for so many people. And I was in a position in our church group of women that I could approach some of the ladies and say, you know, what would you think of a Mother's Day lesson about Eve? Rather than some of the other things that maybe don't apply to everyone and are hurtful and sensitive for some, what if we just tackled it? And of course, they said, well, that's a great idea, but who's going to teach that? And I said, well, actually, I'll even volunteer to teach that. And I would love that. And so that was kind of the first time I presented a chunk of this research. And it was there in that meeting, and we invited the young women to join us, so the 12 to 18-year-olds in our group. And just watching their faces and what I could see was clearly resonating with them, it really took me to the next level of passion on the topic. And it was after that that one of my very, very favorite women in our congregation, I just admire and respect her so much, an older lady who's had incredible life experiences, she just came and took me by the shoulders and she said, this can't end here. Like this is bigger than the last hour. You must continue. And it was then that I kind of said, well, you know, I've kind of actually been thinking about maybe this is a book. And she said, oh, yes, this is a book. And so from there, lots of other twists and turns, and I just got deeper and deeper and deeper into it. And, you know, it was basically 2 years of researching, figuring out, like, discussing with others, figuring out if there really was a value to this to lots of other people. And again and again and again, it was absolute affirmations that absolutely everybody is thinking along these lines. We're all looking into these sort of things. Some of us have more time than others to dig into it. And from there, I just finally got brave enough to start kind of saying those words to people on my, you know, close circles. I think I'm going to write a book. And that just was such a scary thing to say. And once I put it out there, I thought, okay, well, now I have to do it because I don't want people thinking, you know, I'm just one of those other flakes who said they were going to write a book and never writes a book. You know, I really, then it put more of a fire under me. But it also just took on a life of its own. I mean, it just, it was a very natural progression. And because of how much I was giving up, like I said before, with the service and sociality and sleep, I just felt like I got to see this thing through now. And so then it was 2 more years of getting it written and through the publishing process. So.
Okay, it is good to hear, like, just the time frame to realize that these things, as fast as it went, 4 years, it's a big commitment. Yeah, let's go back to Caitlin's piece. Oh my goodness, what an amazing experience that you had, that moment with Eve. And you're right, every one of us have had those feelings of desperation, like, we don't know which way to go. We feel like we are in tune and that we listen to our heart and to the spirit. And yet sometimes in our life, there are not clear answers. And so I love that you're absolutely right. It doesn't matter what the circumstances were. We all understand what that feels like. And to have the fact that you had that painting of Eve right there and that you're able to basically hear her talking to you. I mean, just, oh, talk about an affirmation that you need to do something about something. And then your sweet friend in your ward that basically said, you need to do something. And I bet there are so many, I mean, just countless stories of friends and family members that along the way, when they found out what you were doing, said, Mindy, keep going, keep going. And it's amazing how we need those things to see it through, like you were saying, right? So I guess at this moment, I just want to say thank you to all the people that helped Mindy along the way, because it has made such a difference to Carl and I, and we're excited to share bits and pieces with our children and to, you know, just to be able to teach some of the greater truths. We've told them a little bit so far, but again, it's interesting how you really do have to get them a little bit at a time. So this is going to be something that I think that you'll all find that you can go back to and again and again. Okay, so one of the first things that I loved about the book was the time and care that you took to set the stage to help us understand the great need to understand more about Eve, her mission, and why this understanding is crucial to the development of all the children of our heavenly parents. Share with us a little bit about this foundation and its need.
Okay, so I think this is where it starts to get really complicated. I think because of the broad knowledge of this story, I'm talking like through all cultures, through all time, you know, this, so it's not just our religion, obviously, it's so many religions, so many different groups of people, like everybody knows about Eve. Everybody thinks they know this story. And it's just really, really complicated because you have so much culture woven and tradition, culture and tradition woven into what we believe is a true story. And that's also really complicated because so many of the other groups see it as a story, but not necessarily a true story, but a meaningful story. So it's just really tricky. So I just felt like I had to kind of get to the bottom of, before I could even really launch this, to figure out how do you critique and take sort of a critical analysis of something that is so widely superficially understood. And so I did that by basically looking at the Bible as literature and trying to recognize that there's beautiful value and meaning in the scriptures on lots of different levels, and allowing a little bit of leeway to kind of decipher what is meant in some of the more poetic or literary passages that maybe are much more figurative than literal. And so that's probably one of the really first important parts. And in that, I think there's just inherent issues that you have to kind of develop a basic vocabulary and understanding of, really general issues like language limitations, things like translation and interpretation, redaction, what's missing that used to be there. And of course, cultural biases, those are just really rampant. Also, the issue of having multiple accounts of the story is very tricky because you start wondering, well, which one is the accurate one? And are they all right, or are they all wrong, or how do they fit together? So that's a complicated piece of it. And I think the biggest piece of all that is complicated is what I kind of have come to term figurative nonfiction, where we actually do believe, or I believe, I should speak for myself, I believe that Adam and Eve are real people, that they really lived and went through this very preliminary first experience in mortality. And while they are real, they also do have incredible figurative details of their story, that it's not just a complete misunderstanding of obstetrics that has the Bible telling us that, you know, she came from his rib, that there's way more meaning there, that that's a figurative part, and kind of wrapping our heads around that. The other really basic misunderstanding, I think, very, very broadly across time and cultures and history, is this notion that there was a good tree and a bad tree in the garden. I believe wholeheartedly that both trees were good. And I even, just the other day, I heard a very, very popular speaker kind of throw out this lament that, oh, why did there have to be the bad tree in the garden? And I thought, oh, no, that's not right. They were both good trees. And so that's a really critical misunderstanding that I think has to be addressed right from the get-go. And then kind of the third really crucial piece is in the grand timeline, I think premortality is the missing piece of the puzzle. And of course, in my faith, I'm a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, I feel like the premortal piece of our story is absolutely critical to understanding so much of the big picture. I think normally people look at the Adam and Eve story kind of from our current state as mortals making mistakes, needing to patch those up and fix them and move on. And so we look back at that story, and that's the piece we look at. We draw this connection of, oh, see, they made a mistake too. We flex their story to fit our story, and we look at it as, oh, this is a story about me because they sin and they fix it and they have to go out on their own then and figure it out. I would say a much healthier, for me, more meaningful perspective is go back to the beginning and see in them, they were like the original proxies of us deciding, yeah, mortality is worth it. We want to experience what life on earth and in mortal bodies will enable us to feel and learn. And back then, I really believe that early on in our premortal existence, we had a great relationship with our Savior. He's an infinite Savior. And so even then, we understood what power he had to make things right, ultimately, that he could make everything work for our good. And the trust that we put in him is very much what I see Eve doing in the garden, is recognizing that unbelievable trust she has in this divine being who she loves and recognizes as loving her, and very powerfully being able to turn things for her good and all of our good. And that piece, I think, is really what is missing in the grand understanding through time and across history. And that's the piece that we can't take a fresh look at this story without starting there. So that's where I start.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there's so many bits and pieces. And as Mindy talked, I hope that as you're listening, you're asking yourself questions and you're questioning what you've heard in culture and tradition, because I think those are the moments that are going to help us get to this next level of thinking and to really understand what it was that Eve and Adam did, what their choices were, what their overall mission and their desire was for all of us. So as you think about all those questions and consider all the things that Mindy has just shared, let's dive just a little bit deeper. So let's talk about how the world basically has damned Eve for partaking of the fruit. Tell us how your book paints a different story.
Okay, well, so one of the things that I kind of got deep into much more than I expected is different languages, different issues at work in the actual words that are in the Bible. And one of the most fascinating things I found early on is that the Latin word for apple, which is of course how we really frequently see Eve portrayed in artwork, you know, she so often has an apple in her hand. That word is malum in Latin. And the collaborators of gathering and assembling the Bible really loved double meanings. That's one of the things I've learned in my research. They loved having all these multiple meanings worked in. And that Latin word malum is a homonym, I believe is the right term there, and also means evil. And so right from the start, you can see that that we're getting Eve presented to us as having done something evil, that she is holding evil in her hand. And so from right there, you can step back and say, no, wait, like an apple is not even mentioned in the Bible story. You know, we have figs mentioned, but nobody portrays her with a fig. I've actually come to really like portrayals that have her with something akin to a pomegranate in her hand. I think that idea of just all those seeds is probably really more representative of what that fruit might have been like. And so there at the beginning, I dig into the meaning of fruit, that fruit is meant to be nourishing, that it introduces vitamins to our bodies that we can't produce on our own. And really, that's what the fruit was. The fruit was mortality. The fruit was getting ourselves to a place and circumstance where we could learn by experience. And that's what the story is all about. That's what life is all about, is learning by experience. So I've maybe redrawn that opening scene a little differently than we've seen historically portrayed to us.
Oh, so many good things. And I love that you talked a little bit about how, yes, the Bible, the stories are beautiful, but again, they were authors. They chose to, you know, keep some things in, take some things out, create a more poetic version. And yeah, things get a little bit lost and confused. And you're right. Historically, it looks like an apple, right? But I love the idea of the pomegranate as well. When I think about pomegranate, I also think of fertility, which again makes me think of Eve and our Heavenly Mother. So I love those connections that you made. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about... okay, so you talk throughout the book about the importance of family and how Eve's decision was not the selfish decision that the world has told us for generations. Tell us more about this selfless act.
Well, I guess I have to start by saying that one of the other really enormous misunderstandings or just missing piece of the puzzle that so many people throughout time have needed to make sense of this is what we believe that they could not have children in the garden. So lots of other religions don't see it that way. They think that, oh, no, they could have lived there forever. And we don't see it that way. We actually believe that that was a very static state, that everything was just still. And I think of it as like a way station. It was a waiting place, a place for tutoring and learning, moving from complete innocence to some knowledge, but kind of the equivalent of book learning instead of real life learning, you know, street smarts. They had to move on to mortality to kind of get that street smarts, which is really where real wisdom comes from. I think we kind of all agree on that. And so that part is just super important to understand, that hers was a choice for progress. Hers was a choice to open the door, to cross the threshold to mortality for everyone else to follow. Nothing was going to happen until that happened. And so if you don't understand that, if you're missing that piece, then yeah, that doesn't make a lot of sense. And it seems like, oh, it'd be like a lifetime trip to Hawaii. You just live in paradise. But it wasn't that. It was stillness and a lack of progress and the ability to progress. And so partaking of that fruit opened the door to progress. And I think that's huge. I also think that something that I've find a lot of meaning is we often couple those first two commandments they were given to be fruitful and multiply as being one and the same. And I think that those are two very different commandments. That, of course, you can look at multiplying in terms of reproduction and having posterity as being fruitful, but there are lots and lots and lots of ways to be fruitful. Creativity of all sorts is fruitfulness. And as a woman, I think we all know, as wonderful as a great vacation is, at some point we get ready to like wrap it up and go home. We feel refreshed and renewed. Let's get back to work. Like, let's start doing things. And I think so much of what we, the help that the Lord can offer us comes in doing. It's not when we're sitting waiting to be told what to do. It's more get up and do something and then I can help you. And so just getting out there and being fruitful was about progress. Let's get on with it. Let's get to the next thing. And so I can't help but wonder if maybe there were bored moments that she felt like, okay, I think I'm ready. Like, let's get going, because I do things like that.
Totally. I love looking at fruitful in a different way. And I agree. I think it has a lot to do with industry and just pursuing projects. I think that our heavenly parents, they just have a lot of projects, and that's how we grew and that's how we learned. And I loved how you talked about how the Garden of Eden was more like a tutoring place for them and a holding, weighing place for them, because there was nobody that had entered into mortality yet. There was like a whole, we needed to have some sort of transition phase, right? And the word transgression comes up, and you can talk about that a little bit. But I feel like too, so when you and I first talked about this, you explained to me how Eve was really the only one that could make this first choice. She was the one that needed to eat of the fruit first. And maybe you want to go into detail about that.
That's like a whole opening, a whole other big, another episode maybe. But first of all, I would be totally remiss not to direct you to Valerie Hudson Kastler's talk called The Two Trees at this point. So this is a speech that she gave at a 2010 Fair Mormon conference, where she really examines the two trees. And you'll be able to recognize immediately. She is one of my absolute heroes. I love her. I've gotten to know her a bit. She's just the most outstanding person. I just really, before you take time to read my book, you should go read everything she's ever written, because she's outstanding. But I feel like, and Valerie would concur here, and this is an idea that she really started opening the door to, that if we look at the tree of knowledge of good and evil as the tree of mortal life, of mortality, then, you know, obviously that's a good tree. We need to experience that. Opening that door to mortality is ultimately a woman's prerogative through childbirth. And not that every woman needs to participate in childbirth, of course, but it is a woman's stewardship. That's one of the responsibilities that our bodies have been blessed with, that we can do that. And then if we look at the other tree, the tree of life, I like to think of that tree more as the tree of eternal life. We believe that there are ordinances and covenants that are necessary and hugely valuable and helpful in helping us move into eternal life. And that's a responsibility and a duty and privilege of holders of the priesthood, of certain parts of the priesthood, the ordained members who, you know, Melchizedek priesthood holders, who are able to help us gain access to those covenants. And so I can see very clearly, like Valerie's explained so beautifully, that the tree of knowledge of good and evil is sort of the woman's prerogative, that tree, and opens that door, helps everyone enter into this stage of life, where the next tree kind of stands at the other end of the spectrum, that it's about getting those covenants that allow us to move on and progress into the eternities. And that was more Adam's stewardship. But of course, they both did both of them together. You can't do one without the other. They were completely interdependent in both of them. But I feel like it had to be Eve's choice to partake, because so much of what would happen in mortality that would be especially cruel and difficult, even abusive and exploitative, that would happen to women, would come by virtue of that choice. Just imagine if Adam had been the one to eat from that tree, oh, we would be maligning him so horribly that he allowed all of this to happen to us. So it means so much more, I think, that she recognized that this was just part of progression and that this was going to be something we needed to experience. Not that she was, you know, happily volunteering for the awful stuff that so many women do have to face in the world, always have and still face, but that that she recognized that with divine collaboration with the Savior, that it could all be made to work for our good ultimately. And that faithful courage she exhibited in that choice is what I think can change each one of our stories. That when we can look at it that way and collaborate with divinity through the process of becoming more like our heavenly parents, everything changes. It's just so different when we see it that way.
Absolutely. I love how you tie it back into our story, because I just don't think we can truly understand our story and our purpose unless we understand our parents, whether they are even Adam or earthly parents or our heavenly parents, that divinity, collaborating with divinity. I loved all of that. And thank you for going into detail about the two trees. That was one of the portions that we personally found just really beautiful. And just so, I'm so grateful that you were able to kind of rename them. And did you say that Valerie was one of the ones that came up with the was that your thing, the mortality tree?
She talked a lot about the stewardships of the two trees, the naming of the trees, kind of working through that. And I almost treat it like a mathematical proof in my book, right? Just kind of building, guiding you through how to come to those names. You know, but certainly inspired by Valerie's great work. I absolutely give credit to Valerie there. She's incredible.
That's awesome. I actually did listen to her talk and read it while she was talking not too long ago, maybe just a couple months ago. And it was funny because I'm like, oh, did I miss out on that? So it's really, I love how you were able to come together and connect those ideas. But yeah, Carl and I both really appreciated the way that you simplified and explained the names and the purposes and the roles of the two trees. Okay, so again, we really loved how you talked about all the definitions. You know, you went into Malam with the apple, and then later you talk about how Elohim and Adam are actually plural names. Do you want to talk about that?
Sure. Yeah, I'll just touch on that for a moment. And in a different way, I guess we could say that they're plural names. Elohim, in Hebrew, that suffix, im, I-M, is actually a plural suffix. So the easiest, fastest way to help you kind of wrap your head around that is if we think of the words that we use regularly in English and lots of languages, I think Italian probably kind of started this one off, is cherub. We know that a cherub is a cute little baby angel, right? And cherubim is lots of cute little baby angels, right? So that's probably the most practical, close to home way that we see that plural suffix fit in. And of course, if you don't have to get very deep into biblical studies to know that El, capital E-L, is God's name in a lot of ways of looking at that, Egyptian things and Hebrew things and lots of different scholarly work talks about El as God the Father. And so for me, I love considering that very possibly, and this is, you know, the doctrine according to Mindy Brown, that very possibly Elohim is actually the name of our heavenly parents. And so that name has become much more dear to me over the years. And it's become so internalized that anytime I hear that name in any setting, that is in fact who I picture there, whether we're only being shown God the Father, or we're hearing it, I see them both there. And so to me, that's a huge, deep, deep meaning there. And then in terms of Adam's name, I go into a lot of detail in the book about how Eve's name is more like a calling and a title and very honorary and magnificent from the get-go. Adam's, a lot of people have translated it as like earth or dirt. It's much more of just kind of a generic name that became a proper name. So there was a transition period there. But in terms of the way that of modern day prophets have looked at this, there's been lots and lots of talk, and Spencer W. Kimball was probably the most outspoken about this, saying it was always both of them from the start. Think of them as Mr. and Mrs. Adams, or the Adams family, which of course sounds funny to us. It's like the Halloween family, but you know, we can think of them as the Adamses, and that's also an awkward last name to use it that way. But that, I think culturally there was a period of time in our church history that that just seemed perfectly fine. And that, well, why do you need to be worked up of her not name not being included all the time with his? Because of course we mean both of them, Adam and Eve. But that's not the same to us. And in our modern era, it just doesn't mean the same. We want to hear both of their names. So, for example, the beautiful scripture that Adam fell that men might be, when President Oakes said in a conference talk a few years ago, he wanted to include Eve there. And so he was kind of the first to coin putting her name first. He just inserted Eve and Adam fell that men might be. And I think, you know, jaws probably dropped and tears started to flow around the world as women heard him say that and think, oh, thank you. Thank you for including that. You know, we want to have her name included. So it is helpful as you read the biblical account or other accounts to give them the benefit of the doubt. They meant both, that look at it as Mr. and Mrs. Adam there. But still, let's also work on getting her name included. Let's get her name in there everywhere that we can. And let's give thanks when we hear her included, and point out and like articulate that, thank you, we loved that you included her. So that's a big piece of it. And of course, then, you know, the title, I'm thrilled with the final title we landed on, to have both of their names there, but her name first, which puts some good balance to it, since we very typically hear his name first. So
yeah, exactly. And I think that, again, that was something that Carl was so excited about. He said, the title is Eve and Adam. I'm like, yeah, I know. And it was just so cute how excited he was about that. I want to go back and talk about Elohim for just a second, because I don't want you to think that it's just the Gospel According to Mindy, because I've actually read so many articles recently explaining this, and some were right on the church website talking about how Elohim really is a plural name. And we shared this with our Sunday school class. We teach the 16 to 18-year-old youth in our ward, Carl and I, and I started talking to them a little bit of the symbolism of the Tree of Life when we got to that part in the Book of Mormon a few weeks ago, and then we talked about Elohim, and I explained to them how it really means both of their parents, God the Father and God the Mother. And it was so beautiful, because I just told them, if you ever feel like you want to pray to the Father, but include your mother and to keep her in your thoughts, you can say Elohim. And that's what I've been doing. And I just explained to them, and I just said, now I want you to take everything that I share with you and just go and think about it and find out what works for you. And at the end of the lesson, one of the sweet boys gave the prayer, and he prayed to Elohim. And it was so beautiful, because I thought, you know, sometimes we have to try something to know if it's right for us. And I was so impressed with him. He probably was the person that I didn't think was listening, but yet he was like, he said to me afterwards, see, I was listening. It was so cute. So again, I thought that was so important. And so, because we've been thinking about Elohim being a plural name, and then of course, when you brought up Adam, I was like, oh, it's the family of Adam. Exactly. This makes so much more sense. And it just really makes, for those of us that feel like we've been left out of the scriptures in general, it helps us understand that maybe they were including us, and we just don't understand. We just don't understand. Like you said, modern language is different. And, you know, it just really gave a lot more meaning to us as we read that. Okay, so let's dive a little bit into agency, transgression, any of those that you want to talk about. I know these are both really big topics, so you're welcome to just pick one if you want, whatever.
Okay, well, yeah, maybe we'll just talk about agency for a moment. I do think that agency is absolutely key to the whole story. I mean, just huge. And in some ways, that the fruit that she ate also could you could definitely say represents agency, not just mortality, but agency, that it was her choice to eat. I've kind of made a little hobby of collecting great epithets, if you will, about agency or little titles of it that prominent speakers have shared, just kind of to drive home the point that really everything in the entire plan hinges on agency. So recently I was reading Elder and Sister Renlund's book about the Melchizedek priesthood. And in that they call agency the eternal principle of progression. And really progress has everything to do with agency. George Q. Morris, who was a very early apostle in the back in like the late 1800s, called it the very essence of our existence. I think that's absolutely correct. Beverly Campbell, who wrote a fabulous book about Eve almost 20 years ago, called it the preeminent law of the universe. I think that's a great way to look at it. And the prophet Joseph Fielding Smith said agency is the only principle upon which exaltation can come. And I think when we look at it that way, I would say across the board, women I've talked to about this, whether I've been teaching a lesson or giving a talk about it to a group of ladies or having a conversation, one of the bothersome pieces of the story is this notion that there were conflicting commandments, that how was that fair of God to give them these two conflicting commandments? And there, I could talk for hours about my thoughts about that. But I think ultimately, in terms of agency, the best way for us to look at those is if they hadn't been given two mutually exclusive things that they were supposed to be doing, they could have justified a non-choice as the choice. But the way that it was, if they did one, they weren't doing the other. If they did the other, they weren't doing the first. So it just required their agency. And it had to be one of these complicated life choices. Like in some ways, I laugh and to myself when everybody gets hung up on that, because I think, what could be truer to life? That is what we all face all the time. Either two really great choices, but we can't do both, so you have to choose between two good things, or two kind of crummy choices that you think, oh, but I don't like either of these. Well, too bad. Like, it's one or the other. You're going to have to choose one of them, or something that is a little better than the other. And I think ultimately in this case, they needed it to be totally their agency, such an enormous step in the progress of humankind. The big picture humankind progress had to have agency 100% supporting it. And so that piece of the puzzle was critical, even though we get hung up on that and we look at it in different ways. And ultimately that transgression really was crossing a threshold, that it was so different than what we think of as a sin. And there's volumes there, and you know, I would direct you to that chapter about that, but that it was really their decision to cross the threshold and open the door to mortality for all of us. And I just think everything changes in our lives when we recognize the value and the beauty and the gift of agency. It's an enormous gift.
Thank you. Yeah, those last words, realizing that it's a gift and that it's beautiful. And you're absolutely right. We do have times in our life when we do feel like we are forced to make choices that we don't want to make. But really, agency is everything. And we really do have that agency. And when we do have struggles within agency, the best example is to go back to our mother and father, even Adam, and think, okay, they were in a tough spot. They knew they couldn't progress until they made another choice. One of the things, there's very few things that I remember about my Brigham Young University experience, but I mean, I had a wonderful time, but there's a very few things I can actually tell you that I remember that I learned. But I'll tell you, there's two that stick out really strongly in my mind. The first one was my freshman year Bishop Kuhn, ended up teaching like a health class for teachers my senior year, for like elementary ed and early childhood education teachers. And he said, if you ever have a baby or a little person that's choking, you flip them upside down and you shake them gently. And It will come out. I know that's just a crazy thing, but I will never forget that. Okay. The whole semester, that's the one thing I remember. And then the other key thing is that I took a couple years where I took pretty much any religion class I could from Brent L. Topp. I don't know if you ever took from him when you were there, but he's wonderful. And the one thing that really stood out to me was he got to the part of Eve and Adam, and he said there were two commandments, and this one, and one of them, he basically brought up the whole freely thing that you talk about in the book. And he said, partaking of anything in the garden, there would be no consequences. You could freely partake of everything in the garden except for the fruit of this tree. And that tree, if you partook of that fruit, it absolutely would have a consequence. Now, again, that consequence is life-changing for all of us. We would not be here had Eve not chosen to partake of that fruit. And then for Adam to support her, he knew very well that she had to be the first one. And again, you'll have to go through the book and read about Mindy's explanation about this. But I love all of those portions, and it all comes back to agency. And so again, anytime in our life when we feel like we have no control over our life, and I know this is something that we all feel on a regular basis, listen to the words that you're being spoken, and go back to this story and let Eve help you and lift you and sustain you through those difficult times, because that's why she did what she did. And she can continue to bless us and lift us no matter what it is that we're struggling. Okay, again, even Adam, you talk so much, Mindy, about how they work together in tandem. We could talk about the rib. We could talk about just how they did everything together, even though they had different roles. They were like our heavenly parents. They had one purpose, one mind. I loved how you talked about that. And I loved how you went into detail about how learning about them and the way they worked, even it just really took your relationship with your husband, Doug, the two of you, to the next level. So I just welcome you to share whatever you want on any of those things I just said.
Okay. Yeah, that is a really big topic there too. Well, I guess what I would share for now about that is, as I got to that point of the writing, when I was writing the book, I had just had two devoted years of research and then this one year really devoted to the writing of it. And when I got to that point in the manuscript, it was interesting because I felt a little bit stymied, maybe. Like it stopped flowing. There had been parts, I mean, writing is always hard. There are no easy parts. And, you know, you can say any paragraph you ever read in a book probably took 14 hours to write that paragraph, right? Just because of all the working through it. But even still, things flowed well, and I knew I was on the right track. And I would often have just confirmations that, okay, I got that. Like that feels right. That feels good. Move on. When I got to starting to really talking about their relationship, I felt like maybe there was a little bit more digging I needed to do. And that was one point in the writing process that I actually went back to the research and dug a little bit deeper into some new directions. And I am a total rabbit holer. I go down rabbit holes all the time. And I thought I'd examined this rabbit hole very well, you know, and taken all the branches of it. But I needed to do a little bit more. And I think what really needed to happen was I needed to gain my own absolute personal witness and testimony that they were in this together 100%, that it wasn't about his part and her part, or, well, he's had plenty said about him, let's just talk about her. There is no talking about one of them without the other. And it wasn't necessarily that I uncovered new information there, but it was that I think my heart softened to it in a different way. And I suddenly really, really believed that. Like it became personal. And I started to recognize that. And it all kind of came clear. And it was when I took that little turn in my own thinking that it was like that kind of dammed up river started to flow again. And I was so relieved. And I mean, it was really tears of gratitude. Like, oh, thank you. Like I didn't mean to not include that, and I didn't mean to do that the wrong way, but now I get that I needed to understand that better and believe it myself better. And so that really was critical. The book was never going to get finished until I had figured that out. And so that was an important personal piece of my puzzle.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that. I feel like this portion of the book, Mindy, you shared, this is where you got really personal. I mean, you shared a story about Candace earlier. You shared, you know, the story about your family. There were little bits and pieces, but it was really this portion of the book that it was very personal. And you could tell that it had really affected you in an extremely positive way. And as the flow of the book went on, it felt just like everything was meant to be delivered in the way that it did. And then you got to this point. And I don't think I would have internalized it like I did had you not been so personal. And so now to hear this background of the story and what brought you there is so much more meaningful to me. But again, thank you for sharing that, because again, these are not the little bits that you'll get from the book. This is an extra bonus. But yeah, it's really beautiful. I learned so much from listening to the personal stories about you and Doug. And I will say to those of you listening today, what we get to learn from Adam and Eve, and what Mindy's just described here, is that Adam and Eve did it together. Yes, they had parts, but it was all about them doing it together from the get-go. And I know that there are so many of us deep in our souls that may feel like our relationship with people that we love in our family or our spouse, maybe it's not as deep of a connection as you want it to be. And maybe you feel like you don't have that perfect relationship that Adam and Eve have. I want you to know that not only is it doable, but it's absolutely part of the plan. And just because you're not there yet today doesn't mean that you can't get that relationship with that person that you love. And that when you feel like you are running out of steam and you don't know what to do, go back to Mindy's book and read about she and Doug and read about even Adam. And then realize that you two have the potential to have that kind of a relationship. I think that for me personally, I think about Heavenly Father and Mother. And sometimes when we talk about them and becoming like them, it seems like something so far away. But for whatever reason, thinking about Eve and Adam seems a little bit more close to home. Maybe it's because they are our earthly parents. I don't know. But whatever reason it is, if it helps you to have that that stepping stone that Mindy's talked to me about before, if it helps you take that stepping stone to get that relationship, that eternal relationship that you desire, take it. And don't feel guilty along the way. Like if Mindy had allowed herself to get stuck in that point, she would have never gotten the book finished for us. And so again, so many things. Okay, I could talk about this forever. But again, there's so many beautiful things in this book, and I'm so excited for each of you to be able to read it. But one last thing, Mindy, what surprised you most about writing this book? What's your favorite thing that you learned in your research? Anything like that?
Well, I think ultimately, I really gained a testimony, like I've said, that understanding Eve's story really changes everything, that it's so applicable to us. But I would say for me personally, my entire outlook on everything has shifted, not exactly changed. I mean, I knew some of this, but it's shifted in a way that I am so much happier now. I feel peace, personal peace, so much more often now because of the perspective that I take on life, thanks to Eve. I'm much more patient and forgiving with myself and with other people. And really, I look at life like it's all good. You know, I mean, you always heard people throw that around, and I think, no, it isn't. Some of the stuff is bad. Like, sorry, I'm not going to think that's good. But the secret, of course, and really, you know, in a perfect world, we would have talked so much more about our Savior through all this too, because that's the key to all of this, right? But if we choose, and there's the agency piece of it, choose to collaborate with the Lord, it is all good. And now
all the hard things. I mean, the hard things happen all the time. We are going through hard things in our family. We are, you know, each of my kids individually has tough challenges that are hard for me as their mother to walk through with them and to carry with them. But I really can look at it and say, it's all good. It's all going to be okay. And just such a happier outlook, such a more joyful way of looking at it. And so, you know, when we read that Eve and Adam fell, that men might be and men are, that they might have joy, that's a really direct link, that it's their story and understanding it that allows us to feel joy right now, even when some things are so hard and so yucky and just not what we would choose, so out of our comfort zone, so not the way we thought our future was going to look and play out. It's all good. It is okay, and we can feel that joy. So that would be probably my biggest takeaway.
It's all so beautiful. Yeah, it's just, oh, I'm just so grateful that you were able to just to feel all those things, and I love that you connected the joy and that you are a living testimony of that joy that comes when we understand their story, when we allow Christ to make us whole. You talk a lot in the book about the wholeness of the atonement, and I believe that with all my heart, and I believe that Adam and Eve, they set out those stones for us, and it's the Savior that helps us to cross those stones. And so I think that's the way that we can feel that joy, the joy of the atonement through our lives, no matter how hard it is. So thank you for sharing those things. Okay, as we come to the end, at least our end together, obviously this is the beginning for you, I hope, for so many of you listening, but we started out with the art. You know, Mindy talked about how the beginning of the book started with the painting by Caitlin Connolly, and then we need to talk for just a minute about the painting that's on the cover. I'll just let you go ahead.
Okay, so the cover is just a beautiful piece by Lisa DeLong, who, if you're not familiar with her, she is an amazing lady who is actually a professor of traditional arts in England. She does a lot of travel in the Middle East. Her pieces have kind of almost a Arabic feel to them, and really symmetrical. To me, they just say order and balance and creation. She is a geometer. That's like her official title. And she just does beautiful things. She uses beautiful paper and beautiful mediums, and she uses a lot of jewel tones and richness to it. And the cover that we have is kind of subtle. It's blues and grays. When I talked about it with her, I said, I just want to kind of channel like duck egg colors. Like that was what I just felt like would be a great sort of creation and order piece of it. And so we actually just kind of worked on this piece. It ultimately was a commission. So I have the piece in my collection and my home, which I love. I love to see it up close and in its entirety. And it's a very large piece, which you kind of lose that feel on the cover, obviously. But when we settled on the subtitle of the book, which is Discovering the Beautiful Balance, I had kind of been thinking of lots of other artists who might have just the right feel for it. But that subtitle just was purely DeLong. I just felt like we've just got to get her involved. And luckily I actually had a trip to England planned, and I was able to meet with her and have a great discussion with her about my ideas. I gave her a copy of the manuscript and I said, you know, start with this, like, see if you even like it. Maybe you'd be like, no, I don't want to connect myself to this. But she really appreciated it also. It was something she's thought a lot about. And so we just really let her go to it. And the publishers were thrilled. They'd seen her other pieces and kind of her body of work. And they just really trusted that it was all going to work out. And so we didn't get the piece shipped to us from England until really the last possible minute that it was needing to go to press. And even then it got held up in customs in Memphis overnight. And that was terrifying. I was just really ready to fly to Memphis and carry it home personally, but it made it. And I think it just turned out beautifully. And it really captures the balance between not just Eve and Adam, but between mortality and eternal life and agency and choice and
good and evil and everything in between, and just creation and order. It's just all really captured there. And so I hope the cover really speaks to people. Even if nobody picks it up and reads it, I'm just happy that there's going to be a really gorgeous book sitting there on bookshelves and at least in the bookstore. So.
Oh, they will. And it's such a treasure. When you sent me the manuscript and I got to see the piece, I was like, oh, it just couldn't be more perfect. And you're absolutely right. That second, what do you call the tagline or the second title? The subtitle, Discovering the Beautiful Balance. Yeah, it couldn't be more perfect. So thank you to Lisa for creating that and for completing this beautiful body of work for you. It's stunning and it's just so perfect. Oh, okay. So nitty gritty things. When will your book be available for pre-sale, sale, and where can we buy it?
Pre-sale should be available within the next couple of weeks, and I actually hope to get that date later this afternoon or tomorrow. It will be for sale on Amazon, Deseret Book. I mean, it's Deseret Book is the publisher, so of course it will be there, but they have a lot of different outlets they work with, and it will be on Amazon as well. So hopefully easily accessible.
Yay, I'm excited. Yeah, and I will link to all these things in the show notes. So you'll be able to get directly to the books. We'll have the, you know, we'll have a link to Deseret Book, also Amazon, and we will link to Caitlin Connolly and Lisa DeYoung because we absolutely need to link to them as well. Okay, so will you be doing book signings, and what's the best way for people to know about these events that you'll be doing?
Okay. Yes, Deseret Book is getting the website all set up this week, and so things will be available there. You'll see that I do have a lot of book signing type of things on the calendar with them. A couple of speaking events coming up that I just am kind of trusting that to them, a lot of that. I am trying to get an Instagram account off the ground called Brave Like Eve. It'll be brave.like.eve. Just with a lot of the quotes. Just the nature of a manageable size book required that we had to not use every single quote that would be fabulous to use. And so it's a great venue for me to include some other things that didn't quite make it into the final version. So you'll be able to go into that, and that should be up and running any day now. So.
Okay, first of all, I'm super excited because Carl and I were doing preliminary research, and yeah, we couldn't find anything. So we're so grateful that they're going to have a website, and they will be posting the days that you can go and meet Mindy and, you know, get your book signed. Also, I love that you're going to use an Instagram account to share all the things that you couldn't include in this book. And that will be so special. That'll be really, really great. Okay, so I guess the next question and our last question really would be like, what's next for you? And I get scared to ask that question because, again, we're still at the beginning of this journey for you. You still need to promote the book and get it out there. So there's still a lot of work to be done. And also, when you have something this amazing completed, you want to be able to just sit back and celebrate and to just enjoy the moment, right? And so I don't want you to think that we're rushing over that, because I hope that you'll take the time to just savor the love that Eve has for you and how grateful not only she but Adam are that you were willing to go the distance to share their story and to connect it to each of us, because we all need that. And so, you know, in one breath, I just want to say, make sure you take the time to savor that. And so it makes it hard for me to ask this question, but you did allude to wanting to go back to school. So whatever you would like to share about your next steps, would love to hear it.
Okay. Well, that's so sweet. Thank you so much. I'm so happy that it's been well received. So at least with you, that's great. Thank you. I do have a lot of fun things going on that, will take a lot of attention now when I'm not doing book related things. Like you said in my bio, I am chairing the board of the Elizabeth Smart Foundation, which has some really exciting things coming up. And I would direct you to that website. We're starting a smart defense program actually around the country. You may have seen there was a news piece on CBS this morning, last week, about that. And so, my daughter Candace and I have gone through that program, and it was remarkable. It was such a great experience, especially as a mother of a young adult daughter, to watch her confidence grow in every way, not just physical ways, as she learned how to assertively protect and stand up for herself. That was huge. So I will spend a few years working closely with them, and I'm really looking forward to that. It's an amazing group of people, and I think we have great things coming with that. And I do plan very strongly to go back to school and get a master's, possibly. My husband nudges me toward a PhD. We'll see about that. We'll, you know, see what I have in me for that. But I'm working on finding just the right fit of a program, probably an online program, because my grandbabies come first. And we have number one, who's 15 months old, the cutest thing on the planet. And his little boy cousin is coming soon in a couple of months. And we can't wait to get him here too. And so I just want to maintain that flexibility, because really my family is my number one joy. But I would love to study kind of the intersection between theology and women's studies. And so I just have to decide the angle I want to do that through. So I'm kind of working on that right now, getting ready to undertake that next thing. I'm really excited about that.
Oh, wow. I'm excited to see. I just want to say thank you, because obviously I knew that I was going to be excited about talking about this with you, and it's changed my life. But also, I loved in the beginning, you basically, your story is such a great example to all of us about how we, you know, just lean back on Mindy when you feel like you are not taking the proper road or the proper path. Like, let those passions come at the right season for you. And again, I can't wait to see what happens with this theology and the women's studies for you, which obviously was not available when either of us were going to school. So this will be very exciting. But again, thank you for sharing. Thank you for this gift that you're giving to the world. And thank you for just sharing your heart and being so personal with us today. It was such a joy to spend this time with you. And I love you. And I just wanted to say thank you.
Thank you, Katrina. You're so sweet. This was such a good starting place for everything that lies ahead in the next year or so. I've enjoyed so much talking about it. I'm so grateful that it meant something to you and your husband. That's huge. So that's a good sign. Maybe I'm pointed in the right direction.
Oh, for sure. And just coming from Mindy and I, we want to send lots of love out to all of you from the Candy Colored Studio. And just letting you know that you're not alone, and that you have so many women that are supporting you, and your heavenly parents and your earthly parents, and that you're loved. And just know that we're thinking about you. And I hope that you have a wonderful day.
Thank you. Yes, I second that.
Okay, goodbye, guys. The Candy Colored Club, ladies and I, have got good and dirty lately, diving into the mindset issues and practical tips to help our art businesses. These are stellar ladies and are making this world a bit brighter each day. Each month, we tackle a new topic, which is handpicked by the group, depending on what everyone is struggling with most. We've worked on our email list, pricing, packaging and shipping, mindset roadblocks, and so much more. At the beginning of each month, I send them and PDF and a video lesson with actionable items for them to work on. At the end of the month, we get together in an online meeting and discuss how everyone is doing on the monthly topic. We answer questions and give support. We also take time to share wins with each other, and I see them giving love and support on social media throughout the month as well. We have a Facebook group where we ask all sorts of questions, anything under the sun, and we leave tips for each other. If you think the Candy Color Club membership would be a good fit for you, come join us. The first week of March, it'll be open for you. I'll also have 3 mini courses available that first week of March, one on email lists, another on discovering and developing your style, and the third will be on how to start a podcast. These mini courses will allow you to learn the topic at your own pace, and you can always sign up for a call so that I can help you individually. I'm looking forward to it, and I can't wait to connect with you more deeply and to help you bring your art business to the next level. For more info and for a reminder, go ahead and sign up for my sweet list, aka my email list. You can sign up at katrinaberg.com, or you can just send me a message at K, the letter K, at katrinaberg.com.